Level.
Okay. Did you just turn it down a little bit from what you were just doing? Okay.
I did.
Okay.
Because I was a little hot.
Yeah, you were a little hot.
I was a little hot.
It's a word never used to describe you.
It is a lovely Tuesday morning.
It's snowing here.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You sent me. Well, you didn't send me. You took me out on the balcony.
There he goes. Sorry. Go ahead.
Apologies to Sam Cooke.
Yeah.
You took me out on the balcony there, the camera, with big old snowflakes the other day.
Yeah, big puffy.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. Later,
I like your neighborhood. You have a nice neighborhood.
Our neighborhood is kind of like Sesame Street, which is why we like it. Although our rent's going up next year again, so
of course it is.
So it's a great place to live, but it's not a cheap place to live. But other than that, it's great.
But it's good. So this is On Taking Pictures. This is episode 86.
I think we are on 86. Yeah,
86. I think 86. And we're here each and every week, and we're talking about photography and how charming Bill's neighborhood is. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from fadedandblurred.com, and you heard it first. Here we are with Bill Wadman.
So I can say something about photography, and then I can say thanks for coming for the show.
Thanks for listening.
It's been a lot of fun.
Bill, can we talk about photography?
Okay, fine. No. No. That was a teaser.
That was a teaser. Yeah. That was a teaser of this week's photographer of the week, which we will get to a little bit later.
No. I had a really terrible thing happen to me this weekend.
I can only imagine.
So
something else fell off of your Mark III.
No. Nothing
the
like
LCD
that.
LCD just fell out of the back of the
something
camera.
Something far more existential than that.
Okay. Hit me.
So as some of you may or may not know, because you've heard the theme song, I have also been a musician in a past life. And even though I don't do it a lot anymore, I still think myself a fairly competent musician. Or at least I used to. And every once in a while, I have friends who ask me to play with them, you know, play out with them. And so this Saturday, my friend Dave, who I've known for 15 years.
Right? Dave Matthews?
Yeah. I met him at my first job, and he asked me to come play a few songs with him at this, like, songwriter thing that he does at this bar.
Piano, right?
Piano, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And so I said yes, because I do this every once in a while, and I played on his record, and that was fine, and whatever it is. So they wanted to do a cover of Fairy Tale of New York, the Pogue song.
I do not know this song. I'm sorry.
You know what? I didn't know it either, and I bet you two-thirds of our listenership is screaming at their iPod right now. Apparently, it's a very popular song, the most popular song the Pogues ever did, and is generally...
What's the band called?
The Pogues.
I don't even know them.
It's like a Irish punk kind of stuff. Okay.
All right. Apologies to you guys who like... I've never heard of them. I'm sorry.
Right. So Heather, of course, being a good Irish girl, knows all about the Pogues. And when I didn't know it, she was like, oh, how can you not know this? It's ranked the number one Christmas song every year running in England or something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know the song. So I figure out the song. Now, the opening is piano, and then there's like a little interlude in the middle is piano. And then at the end, it's piano solo. And it's pretty much the same thing in the beginning, this like little interlude and the end. And then there's other stuff in between. So I get up at this show, and we rehearsed the other night, and it was fine. And but I don't have a keyboard to play. I have like an 88 key weighted controller, like a big, you know, studio-y kind of thing that just plays MIDI.
You would plug that into something else to get the actual sound.
Exactly. I have to plug it into my computer and use a soft synth is what I do at home. And I don't, but it's weighs 60 pounds, and then I'd have to bring a laptop, and I'm like, okay, does anybody else have a keyboard? And Dave's brother Tom brought a keyboard. for me to use. And it was, you know, this years old, you know, smaller, it was like 61 key or whatever, and it's not weighted. And he didn't bring a sustain pedal, right? Which is the thing you hold down on the ground so that when you hit a key, you don't have to hold it down. It just plays.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it changes completely the way you play a piano. So I get up there and Dave asked me to play just something to diddle while he's telling a story. And I play this like little really slow arpeggio thing of Jingle Bells for 2 minutes while he tells this story. And then we play a song that him and his brother did 15 years ago, and that worked out fine. And then I
feel like we're getting close to a cliff here.
Yeah. So here it is, time for me to start this Fairy Tales of New York. And
now, do you get the impression that the people in the audience know this song?
Oh yeah, I'm sure they do. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Half of them are, you know, Irish or friends of these people who they know. You know, it's all friends of friends, right? There was no one in the room who was going to like throw tomatoes at me. This was, you know, 20 people, a very common group of people who get together every once in a while to go listen to these people play at this bar.
Gotcha.
And so it's not like it was, which maybe made it even more embarrassing. So anyway, I start the song and I'm thinking about the fact that I don't have a sustain pedal. So I'm holding the keys down in a way that I normally wouldn't have to play what I'm playing. And my mind is like somehow wandering. Like I just split. And it was me playing piano and then it was me watching me playing piano. And that's never a good place to be.
I think you may have talked about this in context of shooting as well. Like
yeah.
When you just kind of lose yourself during a shoot and it's almost like you're watching yourself do the shoot rather than being present in the shoot.
Yes, that happens sometimes during shooting too, but you know, in photography, you look down a thing and then you hit a button, right? You're not hitting 88 different buttons
right.
in unison, you know, or, you know, in some sort of pattern. And so I flub a few notes. And I'm like, whoops, okay, got, you know, and then the song starts and they start singing. And then I get to the interlude where I have to play something similar and I flub it again. And it gets to the end of the whole song, which I played fine while everyone else is playing, and I flub it again the third time. Now, this is something that never happens to me.
So so when all eyes are on you and just you,
yep,
you crumbled.
Yes. You know, not in a like a, oh my God, he just sat there staring at the piano way. It's just that, you know, a few clams, as they would say in the music business.
You wouldn't have been voted through to the next round on American Idol.
Now, in my defense, I play once a year. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really play anymore. And before I went to the show and after I got back from the show, I could sit down and play it fine. It's just like there was this moment where I just sort of didn't have it. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Okay. So this big long story is all to start talking about fear of failure and the embarrassment that goes with it. Because I think this is a huge topic, right? That we kind of skirt around sometimes.
Sure.
I can't let this go, Jeffrey. Like,
yeah,
you've been eating away at me for a few days now.
Yeah.
Like we got back from the thing and it was even worse because my friend Ali was there. Came with Connie and I to go see this thing. And he was there and I was trying to impress my friend who had never seen me play anymore. And then I really kind of blow it. And I hate it for a number of reasons. I hate it because A, I'm supposed to be good at this, right? Like I do have,
yeah, but how good at it can you possibly be by your own admission when you play once a year?
Well, yeah. Okay. Yes, I mean,
it's a muscle that you rarely flex.
Sure, but I, you know what it is? It's just like, I can do this. Look, it's not like I was playing Liszt or something. Like I was playing an Irish song, you know? I mean, this is not high art, you know, as far as like difficulty is concerned, right? This is not a virtuosic piece of music. And I can play it fine. It's just like I suddenly got like dazed by being up there in front of everyone doing it. Now, I've played in front of hundreds of people before, much more difficult pieces than this. In fact, there's video on YouTube of me playing more difficult pieces than this, you know, up on Vimeo and stuff.
But so, I would argue that you were playing more regularly when these were recorded.
Of course I was, right? But I mean, but the excuse is Sure, that's true. But you know what? I should have been able to play this thing. It's like playing three chords. It was not a, it's not a difficult thing. And I just, I'm kicking myself because this is precisely the kind of thing, the result that scares you away from trying a lot of things in the first place, you know, because you, you know, if somebody asked me today, if, oh, would you like to come play with me at this bar? I'd hesitate more now because of what happened on Saturday. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure.
And that the embarrassment they fit. Now, as most people say, no one cares about you as much as you think they care about you, the things you do. You know what I mean? No one's sitting around today still talking about the fact that I flubbed a few notes in Fairy Tale of New York. Right? None of the people
probably
who
not.
Were there. Right.
Probably not.
They don't care. In fact, they had a few drinks in them. They probably don't even remember. But to me, this is like, this is a real, like, it pains me that I failed because I hate failing. Like, I hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it. Now, there's some people who can ram against a wall and fail and just back right up and slam against the wall again because it's all about just, like, it's a persistence thing. You know what I mean?
Sure. Then there are other people.
Like me.
Like you, who will let it pervade everything that you do
yeah.
until such time or until enough time has passed for you to move through it.
Yes. Now, it's what's interesting about it is that I've had very few instances where I've had this happen photographically, where I've gone into a shoot and come home and it's really been screwed up for some reason that I didn't realize, you know.
Right.
Either the film didn't get to, you know, nothing's on the film or everything's really out of focus or, you know, I've never really had that. I've had a client once hire me and I flew up to shoot him for a book cover and he hated the pictures to the point where he wanted his money back. I think that was once and the pictures were fine. The pictures were as good as I could have possibly done considering who he was, what he was wearing and where we were shooting. What he really didn't like is where he was, what he was wearing and what we were shooting. But it still, it ate away at me for a long time. The fact that this guy was unhappy with my work, you know, I don't know. It just, ooh, you know, it's funny enough. The guy, as we're speaking, an iMessage just popped up on my screen.
Yeah.
From the guy I was playing with. And I apologized to him yesterday on iMessages. And he just wrote, oh, bosh, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But see, here I'm still thinking about it, right? But isn't...
But don't we get hooked up into that cycle?
Yeah.
We get hooked into... locking on to something that we notice.
Yes. Yeah.
And chances are no one else did.
No one else cares. Right. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like there are those people, I have friends of mine and people I know and photographers I know who seem to be able to do no wrong.
Well, you're, thank you. Wait, what?
You know what I'm talking about, though? You know those people.
Sure.
Who are just sort of like golden people.
Yeah. No matter what happens, they land on their feet.
Right.
And move forward.
And, you know, and I've had people call me golden boy before, right?
No, you haven't.
Yeah, I have. Not people I like. But so there's a sense that, like, I can do no wrong. And it's like, no, I do wrong all the time. Did you hear me play Fairy Tale of New York the other night? You know? Right.
But now does that become this sort of meme failure in your head for everything for a while? Do you let that creep into your photographic process, your post process,
it tries.
Your shooting?
It tries. And, you know, it's funny because this was all Saturday night. On Sunday morning, I had a shoot. I had to shoot six people in like 4.5 hours. excuse me. And they were difficult shots. I'm doing this sort of recreation of these 1890s shots that I was working on. And they involve a lot of posts, some of them, and a lot of compositing and that kind of stuff. And so they were not just set up a single light and you're done kind of pictures. They were stuff I actually had to think about. Now, I took on this job, which I'm not getting much for, mostly because it sounded like it was interesting, you know, because sometimes you got to do stuff that it's, you know, she told me what she wanted. No, we want to do these Siamese twins. We want to do this. We want to do that. I said, you know what? I have a vague idea of how I would do that, but I'm not sure exactly how I would do that. So yeah, let's do that so that I could see if I can do it. You know, I like trying things that I don't know how to do, you know? And so we're doing this thing, and it ended up working out well, you know?
Okay. Now I have a question for you. Externally, you flubbed a few notes.
Yep.
Internally, you failed miserably.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take on something to make up for that? I mean, are you mentally trying to make up for that failure with this new project? Do you take on more than you think you can achieve or do or finish, thinking that somehow that's going to make up for?
Well, you know, in your comment before where you said so long enough time passes that you can get past it.
Mm-hmm.
There is an argument to be made that the more work you can do, the more stuff you can put between the failure and now, the further in the past it goes, whether or not, you know, chronologically it's far in the past, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was Saturday, but I had that shoot on Sunday day, and then I had a shoot Sunday night I ended up having to do. So Saturday feels a long way back from now, mm-hmm. you know, because of that.
The whole word failure, though, is...
it's totally loaded.
It's strange.
Yep.
I used to use that word a lot more when I was younger, and my mom would...
Here we go.
She would say, there's no such thing as failure. There are just things that didn't work out the way you wanted them to.
Yes, and that's exactly what happened. Unfortunately, it worked out that way in front of everyone. And I think there is an element of that for music and performances. Like, you know, if you're doing music or you're on stage in theater, if you make mistakes during a performance, a lot of time, if they're obvious enough, people will notice them and they're there. Where if I make a mistake while I'm retouching an image, I can go back and fix it, you know?
Sure. If you're present enough to catch it in the first place.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, it's very, I guess it's probably rare that like a painter would even show a failure to anybody, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why you see all these canvases by Matisse and stuff, and they're all like half finished. Well, they're half finished probably because he started working on them. He goes, yeah, that's going nowhere. And he stopped and started working on something else.
Right. That's a funny thing. There are photographers that have no problem showing you their raw images.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those that I've known or still know that you couldn't pry the raw image out of their cold, dead fingers.
Right. Yeah.
You're not going to see what I shot. You'll see what I give you, but you're not going to see what I shot.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting.
Well, for clients, I tend to do that because I tend to be the, like, I never show raw files to my clients because,
why?
Because they're expecting a certain level of stuff that looks like my final stuff. And if I mm-hmm. show them stuff right out of camera, they look at it and go, that's not what your pictures look like. And I go, yeah, I know that. It takes another 2 hours to get it to look like what you think it looks like.
Right.
So for me, and I've had that experience before, you know,
it's funny though. Photography is it's strange that way. I mean, if you're hiring an architect, you're going to want to see the drawings before you just show up and see the final house.
Yeah. Sure. And
if you're hiring a web designer, you're going to want to see comps before you see the final site. If almost any other sort of creative discipline, you're going to want to see, there's an expectation.
Sure. Okay. But in the case of, say, the architect, is the house the final thing, or is it the final plans, but he's not going to show you the sketch he did on a piece of graph paper in his living room one night? Because that,
maybe.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I think that's a better analogy.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this sense that, yeah, you don't want to show somebody something that's not finished, you know?
Sure.
But how many times do you start something and don't finish it because it's not going in the right direction, or because you think that where it's going is nowhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's it, you know, it's, I did this stuff the other day. And now if I was going to take on the composite stuff that I did the other day, say 3 years ago, I would have been much more nervous about it. I would have been much more worried about failure than I was the other day. There's a certain, I have enough experience in doing it that I know basically what I need to get to be able to do what I need to do in post, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that kind of familiarity comes with experience. Now, if I didn't have that experience and I was really worried about it right now, or, you know, on Saturday night, maybe I would have flubbed those notes because I was worried about how those pictures are going to come out the next day. You know, the first magazine shoot I did, I was terrified. The second magazine shoot I did, I was terrified. You know, you go in for a new client, or you're working on a commercial job that pays a lot of money. You know, a lot of money's on the line, and ultimately that line ends at you. That's all scary stuff.
What are we talking about here? Did you blow it because you didn't have the right pedal, or did you blow it because you didn't know the song?
I knew the song.
I mean, at some point, you know, you're going to hand Stevie Wonder any piano he's going to play.
Of course. Yeah. I was overthinking it because I didn't have the pedal, and then it caused me to lose where I was and flub it. It's sort of, you know what it is? It's like, what's the yips?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
You had the yips.
I had the yips. That's exactly what it was. Right. And you know what? Everyone gets the yips.
Sure. It's how you recover from it.
Right. And there are times, I bet, when both of us, when you're writing, that for like a few days, you're like, yeah, all this is crap.
Oh, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
It happens with almost everything that I do.
Right. Does it worry you if to you, everything kind of feels like crap while you're working on it? Does it worry you if something doesn't feel like crap while you're working on it? Is it like, wait a minute, this isn't the way it's supposed to go. This is not the script.
No.
Okay.
No, because in you know, like writing in college and writing certain types of things, I seldom do rough drafts, and it seems like the more I go along, the more I need to do rough drafts now. I get the sort of
purpose of rough drafts, the utility.
Yeah,
of them.
I get the sort of crap writing out of the way, and I try to get to the good stuff.
Okay.
You know, now that doesn't happen all the time, and I will say I don't post things that I'm not happy with. If I don't get to a place where I'm at least satisfied with it, I don't have to be sort of over the moon about it. But if I don't get to a place where I think it's good lately, anyway, I just won't. I won't post it.
Yeah. But
I try not to.
Do you ever try to write something, and no matter how much time you take on it, it still never works out?
Yes, and then I move on to something else.
Does that?
That's the same thing with painting. I've got a painting that I've been working on for probably 8 months.
Yeah.
And I've scraped it off and done it again, and scraped it off and done it again, and scraped it off and done it again. And it's not going where I want it to. And I put it aside and move on to something else, but it's like, you've seen Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
It's my Marla.
Okay.
You know, it's that, what do they say? It's the sore on the roof of your mouth that would heal if you could only stop tonguing it.
Yes.
it's that. So I keep going back to it, trying to heal this painting, and it just won't happen. And it drives me nuts because I know I can see it in my head, but there's a disconnect from what I can see in my head to getting the palette knife and the brush to do what I want it to do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's
makes
the whole
me second guess everything. And it's like, look, you can see this. I can see this crystal clear in my head. So
is that a failure of imagination to get from point A to point B, or is it a failure of skill?
I don't know. I'm having I have discussions with myself about that.
Right. Is it that my chops aren't good enough, or is it that I think that I know what it's supposed to be, but obviously I don't know what it's supposed to be well enough to recreate it.
Or, I mean, it's happened with composites where, you know, I'm hired to do something and I think it should be well within my grasp, but these little details just don't come together. Yeah. You're 80% there or 90% there, but it's the last 10% that makes 100% of the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I used to have a roommate in college at Berkeley who was a trumpet player, who's now a school teacher up in Maine somewhere.
Hmm.
A band teacher, you know. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Rob used to go to the first time he went to his trumpet teacher. Now he was like all state trumpet, you know, for his band in Massachusetts. Like he was a really good player even going into Berkeley. And he went to his first lesson because, you know, you have all your classes, but you also have individual lessons on your primary instrument. Right. So he goes in for his first lesson with some hotshot trumpet player guy who was like going to be his new teacher that he was all sort of really nervous about because this guy was like, you know, hot stuff. And the guy was sitting there and they were going to start working on some stuff and like working on some improvisation. And the guy wouldn't let Rob play trumpet for the first month.
Hmm.
He's like, sing me what you're going to play.
Oh, wow.
Right? Don't let it be muscle memory. Know what you're going to play and sing it to me.
See, I love that.
Yeah. So it's essentially describe what you're going to paint in detail in writing, you know, see if that's a way for you to pull it out, you know?
Yeah. I had I was doing theater, regional theater for several years. And one of the prop master at one of the theaters I was working at wouldn't let me use power tools.
Dick.
Yeah. He wouldn't, you know, he taught me how to use spoke shaves and draw knives and to learn a respect for the material before you just go at it willy-nilly with, you know, a carbide blade or something.
Right, right.
And I really appreciated that because it taught me to see the material differently.
Yeah.
To see what was possible with the material differently.
Sure.
And I really liked that.
Yeah.
That sort of approach, I guess is the word.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking a lot about the last couple of years and my own mind games, all of which, you know, we talk about all the time on the show. And I've kind of come up with this thing, like going forward, like in this new year and starting now, my new thing is just to say yes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if I have an idea, do it, make it happen. Like today, can't do it today because you got to get somebody for it, do it tomorrow. Like don't make lists of all the stuff you're going to do someday. You're going to do it right now. And if somebody asks you to do something, well, maybe it's not as much money as you want, or maybe it's not money at all, but is it interesting in any way? Well, then do it.
Right.
Because what else are you going to do? You're going to sit at home? Well,
is it Seth? Is it Seth that said you can only control when you start?
I don't know, but that's a good one. Yeah.
Somebody, I can't remember who it was. It might be Seth.
But you know what that is? But the idea that like, I'm going to say yes, even if I don't know if I can pull off what it is that I'm thinking of doing.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's all about just doing it. Right.
Yes.
And you will get better by repetition and you will get better just by pure chance. If you work on 10 projects, a couple of them are going to be pretty darn good, you know, even if eight of them don't work out to what you want them to be. Not all of them are going to not be what you want them to be. At least one of them is going to hit, you know.
Right. I tend to Vincent Versace said something several years ago that's kind of stuck with me. And he says that practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. You have to practice at practicing.
Yes. Yep. And you know, again, it's all just doing it every day. And I mean, like when I was doing the daily stuff, I liked doing the daily stuff, like the 365 portraits and stuff, because I liked the idea that, you know what, not every one of those came out the way I wanted it to,
mm-hmm.
but I shot 365 of them, which means at least 100 of them are pretty darn good, you know? Mm-hmm. And do I look back and are there a few that I can still talk about as the ones I don't like? Sure. You know,
I would like to see you go back to maybe even some of the drabbles.
Yeah.
Go back to the raw.
Yeah.
And just start reprocess with the raw
them and
file.
See what I do now.
And see and let's see what drabbles 2013 the remix or the redux or whatever looks like. Yeah. How would you do things differently?
I did that a couple times, not with the Drabbles, but like the picture I took of Imogen Heap.
Right.
I never liked the way I post-processed it back in the day. Like it was too heavy-handed. I was doing it on a laptop. It wasn't calibrated. This is before I was into any of this stuff, seriously. And I went back and pulled the raw file out and played with it and did what I would do now. Well, this was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Right.
And it was very different from what I ended up with. Not necessarily better, but just different, right? I mean, every single thing I work on, I'll say, oh, you know what? I couldn't have done that 2 years ago. Like I wouldn't have been this good at this 2 years ago, you know? Just like when I did it the first time, I couldn't have done that 2 years before that. You know, you're always getting better.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Right. But I mean, if you're working at it, you're going to naturally get better just from repetition. The nice thing about a lot of photographic stuff is that I don't really think too much about, I mean, yeah, you know, I'll look at my camera. You know, it was funny the other day I was working, and on all these cameras, there's the little roller up by your shutter button. And there's the thing on the back, you know, that you roll. So one's aperture and one's shutter speed or whatever. I don't know which is which. I've been taking pictures with Canon cameras for 7-8 years now.
Right.
If you asked me which one does which, I couldn't tell you. I just roll them and look at the screen and see which one changes. You know, like my mind never clicked because I'm never have it to my eye and I need to do that without thinking. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I'm always like, oh, I'll pull away from my eye. I'll change the settings and then I'll go back up and start taking pictures. So there's certain things that even though I've done them 150,000 times, they still haven't clicked just because it's just, the detail of which wheel does which is just goes right through me somehow, you know?
Right.
But it's funny how that is, you know?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's similar things for you.
With the way your camera's been going lately, one of the wheels is liable to fall off.
It worked really well the other day, actually. It's funny, I came home with all these files, and I shot a bunch with the 85 1.2, and I shot a bunch with some with the 50 and some with the 35. And it's amazing how much of a difference the different lenses make on the image quality, not just the focal length. But like my 85 isn't that sharp. I think I need to send it in and get it fixed. Cause it was actually soft, even stopped down a little bit, which was kind of pissing me off. Cause other times I've used it, it was so sharp that it scared me. Like it was like pixels right next to each other. You could put zebra stripes up there, you know, and you'd see black, white, black, white, black, white. And the other day it was like a little soft and I was like, but it actually worked for what I was doing. Cause it was supposed to be from the 1890s. I don't know. I guess my thing is that my attempt is to try not to be scared of failure. Right now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to try to do everything. I mean, you have to make decisions of what kind of work you want to do, correct?
Sure. Sure. Editing, not only your work, but the type of work that you even begin.
Right.
Is another skill set that I think a lot of people, not just photographers, a lot of people don't take the time to really refine.
Right. Like I could start shooting landscapes or, you know, still lifes. And I've done some of that before and I'm okay at it, but it doesn't interest me at all. You know?
Well, you're going in a new direction with some of your nudes that you're working on.
Yeah.
I mean, like those are getting more abstract.
Sure.
And that's interesting.
Yep. And, but I think that there's, you know, there's something to say for, you know, you can always argue something, right? You could say, I mean, we were talking about before the show and I said that I don't like pageantry.
Right.
And you took me to task for that.
Not that you don't like pageantry.
Okay.
But that you sometimes get in your own way.
In what way? You think that I think too much about it before I start?
I think that you focus on you need to do it this way because that's the way you know how to do it, and you don't allow happenstance. You don't allow happy accidents to come in.
Okay.
Because you're really reined in on, well, I need to do this. Well, yes, that may be, but I think part of what's holding you back is your feeling that you have to do things a certain way.
I think where that comes from in my mind is an attempt to see my last Tuesday, I went to a salon thing that I go to where a bunch of artists, musicians, painters, filmmakers.
Right. Right.
And every time we meet, one of us shows a bunch of work, and I was last week's thing. And a bunch of people looked at my stuff who hadn't seen it before. And a number of them said very complimentary things. And we're just saying that one girl looked at it. She goes, "You have a very distinct style. Like, I look at your pictures and you could see that they're yours. You know, like they feel like part of a cohesive whole." I take that as a great compliment because that's what I'm trying to do. I see which my answer to your comment, which I don't think is entirely incorrect, is that I see my work as refining what I do so that I approach perfection at the very narrow thing that I do, as opposed to sort of scattershotting all over the place to see what happens, you know? And I may be wrong. It may be the wrong tactic or the wrong strategy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I go back and forth on it, actually. Maybe I am too rigid. I don't know.
I think that you, because you're good at what you do, because you've achieved some note for what you do,
yeah,
you hold on to, well, then I know what I'm doing.
Well, maybe you do,
but maybe you don't.
I know what I'm doing in what I do, yes.
Sometimes.
Right. Well, yeah.
Sometimes you're still a little ham-fisted.
Okay,
sometimes
you're still a little heavy-handed. That's the case with everybody. You know,
it is.
That's the case with every artist, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it's, there's sometimes a reluctance on your part to let that happen and see where that goes.
But you don't think that's true of most people who make stuff?
I don't do a show with most people who make stuff.
Okay, I'm just wondering. Like, do you think that this is a specific thing to me, or do you think artists in general are like that?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I know that you and I have talked about where your career is or isn't.
Yep.
And what some of the causes, or what some of the reasoning, or what some of the criteria are that are or not. Or are not being met. And I think one of the things that keeps coming up is there's a rigidity about what you are and are not willing to do. And I think this is why I love hearing, I'm going to say yes. I love hearing this from you,
yep.
Bill. I love hearing, I'm going to do things that might make me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm going to do things that might mean I'm not the smartest kid in the room.
Right.
I'm going to do some things that might mean X. I love hearing that.
It's interesting because my fear is not always failure. In fact, my mm-hmm. fear is very rarely failure in photographic stuff. There's very little I don't think I could do if I put my mind to it. My biggest fear, not that I can do anything, but you know what I mean? Like, within reason, I understand how most stuff is done. I could figure it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear artistically, to use the jerk term, for lack of a better term, is that I will lose myself, that I will try all these different things and then I won't know who I am at all and what I'm trying to make. And then I'm just this nebulous cloud where I'm not making any decisions at all. And then what kind of artist am I if the whole point is that, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. But you've got to pick your battles.
Right.
You know, you are the guy that will cobble together 52 jQuery scripts to make your website work, rather than doing a simple solution that somebody else came up with.
Yes.
And while there is something to admire about that, the time, energy, effort, and thought that went into that could have been put towards something that relates more to your career, because you're not a web designer. You're not a coder. You're not, I mean, yes, you can do those things. Yeah. And I'm guilty of the same thing. So I'm not calling you out on anything that I'm not calling myself out on. But to reiterate, I love hearing Bill say, I'm going to be more open to things that I would normally be uncomfortable with.
But in the case of, say, website stuff, right?
Yep.
If the canned solutions are not exactly what I want, you're saying you need to give up on that battle, that's a battle that I should choose not to fight. It, just as an example. Yes. I'm not saying that necessarily.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Because the one thing that maybe you want your site to do, mm-hmm. five people care about.
Yes. True. Right.
And you're going to spend the next 2 weeks hassling over code,
yep.
to try and get it. And then in the end, you're still going to go, well, you know, it's not exactly what I want, but it, you know, it's close enough.
True.
So then what are we talking about? What are we talking?
Yeah, but you know what? And that difference is everything.
Maybe.
I understand what you're saying. I agree.
If you were hiring yourself out to do code,
right.
which is less and less because, you know, there's less and less of a market for it relative to where you want your career to go.
Right.
Again, I'm gonna go back to it. I like hearing 2014 Bill say, "I want to do something that I'm not normally known for doing. I want to do something that I'm not normally comfortable doing."
It's also a matter of me getting older.
I don't follow. How do you mean?
You know, I turn 38. Am I 38 now? No, I turned 38, in January 4th.
Right. Right.
And there's part of me that's just, you know, it was doing my will last week and it was reading, I read this, this sci-fi book, Forge of God by Greg Bear.
Yeah. Great book.
And I'm a huge fan of that book and Anvil of Stars, the sequel. And sure. I was talking to my friend Derek about it and I had never read it and he's a sci-fi fan. So I bought him a copy of the book and then I found a Kindle copy that I had and I read it last week too. And the whole thing of this book, not to go into it, but is that, you know, the earth is going to get blown up and all these people are thinking about what they're going to do with their time left, essentially, mm-hmm. you know, and some of them like stayed home and some of them go to Yosemite and some of them, you know, continue right. doing their work out on a ship because that's what they've always done. And it was, of course, you know, you and I are among the people who know all too well about mortality.
Sure.
But it really kind of got me thinking. I was just like, you know what? I take so many things, and we all do, but I take so many things so seriously. For example, me flubbing notes at a stupid bar the other night.
Right.
I take so many things so seriously that I just let these things eat away at me.
How many times have you played the song on your big fancy 88 key weighted blah, blah,
since
blah,
Saturday
blah,
night?
Blah. Yes.
20 times.
See?
Yeah. Right. Because I need to prove to myself that I can do it. And I do it fine every single time. It was like, it was this moment of nothingness. Right?
Oh, yeah. All right.
It's frustrating.
Yeah.
All right. Let's, you want to talk about Squarespace or do you want to try something else before we do that?
We can talk about Squarespace. I want to get back to the other stuff on right up here top.
Okay.
Up top here.
Well, let's talk about Squarespace because we're about.
Let's talk about Squarespace. Let's talk about, speaking of not having to cobble together 42 jQuery scripts to get a portfolio of images.
It's so, so true.
Yeah. You know, and I got to tell you, the new themes, the new templates.
Wait, have you found even newer ones than the ones that we...
Just the ones we talked about last week. I don't think there are new ones from, or last, not last week, but last time.
Okay, I should probably read some. How come you never read any copy?
Galapagos, that's one.
Okay.
Forte is fairly new.
Yep.
Native.
Okay.
Or is it native?
It should be all of those things.
Here, you want me to do it? Where is it?
We're gonna give you.
Here it is. Now that's the Shutterstock one.
You got the Squarespace one.
Where is it?
I sent you a link, but I don't know if that's good. That's not gonna get you to mine. I can't send you a link easily. I have it open in front of me though. What? People love this stuff. This is what they tune in for.
This is it. Us fumbling. Fumbling.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'll start and then you can come in.
I don't know where it is.
Oh, my God. Really? Go search it out. This episode brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own website. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code OLDMANJEFFREY.
See, as he can't find the document.
It's your own fault. Squarespace is constantly updating their platform with new features, new designs, more support. They have beautiful templates to start with and tons of style options for you to adjust, so you can really create your own space online. Squarespace takes care of hosting, SEO, and even makes your site automatically look great on any device. It's incredibly easy to use, and if you want some help, they have 70 employees that are on their customer care team based in New York. And they truly care about design, and really shows through their whole site, which they're always updating with fun new branding. They've won lots of design awards, et cetera, et cetera. They have two new iOS apps for Squarespace customers. Squarespace Blog, which lets you easily draft, post, schedule, and review posts.
It's very clean, too. There you go. I have messed around with it. It's really clean.
As well as monitor and manage comments on your blog. So you've played with this, and it works good?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Yep.
Squarespace Blog is fully integrated with Layout Engine, allowing you to easily format text or markdown, tap and drag images within your posts, and modify detailed post settings on the go. And there's also Squarespace Metrics, which allows you to monitor website analytics like KPIs and page views and unique visitors, projections, charts for your website. They're all at your fingertips, as well as new iOS 7 updates for Note and Portfolio. And don't forget about audio collections for musicians and the amazing new 3D visualizer for shipping, so you know what size box you need to put stuff in.
I really like the Portfolio app. If I'm being finicky, what I'd like to be able to do, though, is reorder the galleries, because right now it displays them
in the order
like alphabetically.
That you get them?
No, in the order that they show up on the screen, it displays them alphabetically.
Okay.
I'd like to be able to move a gallery around.
Okay.
But that's just me.
Okay. Well, you should let them know that. As I said earlier, you can try Squarespace for free. No credit card required. If you decide to purchase, it starts at just $8 a month. That includes a domain name if you sign up for a year. And make sure you get 10% off and support the show by using the offer code OLDMANJEFFREY, all one word. Don't worry.
Hey,
January is making fun of me.
Who was it? Somebody in the group, on Taking Pictures,
the other day.
Just signed up the other day.
I don't remember, but they made a point of it. Yeah. They showed their work. It was nice. Landscapes, as I recall, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you're not, just a little plug, if you're not a member of the group or if you're not posting and sharing work, go check it out.
Go check out the Google Plus group.
We should. It's usually in the show notes. Is it in the show notes?
We'll put in the show notes. So thank you very much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. You know, the one thing that drives me crazy about web design in general with photography, and I think we've talked about it a little bit before, but just I love full bleed, showing my pictures full bleed. But I can't do it because so many of my pictures
because
are portrait.
So many of my pictures. Yeah.
So what do you do? Is there an answer?
You just make them big and let them fill the screen. They're just going to be longer.
No. Portrait ones end up getting cut off on the top and the bottom because it stretches them to the width. See what I'm saying?
Oh, like in a grid type thing.
Yeah, or like full page. If you have like a landscape layout browser, you know, if it's 1,000 pixels wide by 800 tall, it's going to stretch that out and cut the top and bottom off. Although one cool, really cool thing about the Squarespace way they do that, you can in the portfolio setup, like when you have all your images, when you're looking at editing your gallery, you can use this little dot on each image and move the dot to where the focal point of the image is, so that when it stretches it out, you make sure the important part is in frame, which is kind of cool.
Or you use a template like Ishimoto or something.
Yeah,
it's a horizontal scroll.
Yes, yes. I would love to. I'm going to use one of those. Maybe I just wish I could make the pictures taller. You know, I like having big pictures. It's a battle. This is displaying your images is a very tough thing. It's like putting stuff up on a gallery wall. You know, it's hard to choose the right order. Anyway. What's next?
I like this Ishimoto thing.
You like Ishimoto?
Yeah.
Let me look. It's a nice thing. Let me see what you're talking about.
I used to go to, I went to high school with a guy named Jay Ishimoto.
Are you still friends with him?
I haven't talked to him in years.
Well, lots.
But he used to make the best mixtapes. they were all named, but he would name them like it was what is it, anagram? Is that what that is? Where only he knew what the letters meant, and we would just get the letters. Like, and he would make several copies for the group.
So he's a wise ass.
He was then.
Yeah,
but they were fantastic mixes.
You should give him a call. You should find him on the Facebook or something.
Forte, that's another one that you could use.
Yeah, I started playing with a different one, which I can't remember now off the top of my head.
Anyway, yesterday,
yes,
had a chance to talk to David Duchemin, and I think we've mentioned him before.
Yep.
On the show. I'm almost positive we have. Really fantastic travel and humanitarian photographer. He does workshops all over the world. Wonderful writer. And the founder of Craft and Vision, whose ebooks I really like a lot. And we were talking about how the market is changing and how you know, ebooks are still, I think, a really wonderful solution for learning new techniques.
Okay.
And expanding your reach and expanding, you know, your knowledge and that kind of thing. And I was asking him about what their most popular ebooks were. And he said, still the most popular ebooks are 10 and 10 more, which were the first, 10 was the first book he wrote, the first ebook he wrote for Craft and Vision, and 10 more was its follow-up. And basically the idea is 10 things you can do to improve your craft without buying another piece of gear. And we have talked about some of these things before, but I think it bears repeating that there are exercises, there are little things that you can do to get better that don't involve you going and buying a new Mark III or a new, you know, 24-500 or yeah. Whatever.
Almost nothing to do with getting better involves going and buying anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and 10 is now free. So okay. you can download 10 for free. And I just kind of wanted to real quickly, here's the top 10 things that he's talking about for him. And each of them include little exercises that you can do. So number one is get pickier.
Okay.
Seems pretty obvious,
yep.
Right? Get pickier. And the exercise for that is head out with your camera for an hour and force yourself to shoot 100 frames. Push yourself creatively. Lots of people do this as a creative exercise, but now do the opposite. Head out and shoot only 3 frames.
You know, it's funny. I almost never will shoot 100 frames if I was walking around.
Right.
I would end up shooting 3 all the time. Yeah.
So, you know, create depth. Yep. Get balanced.
Yeah.
Exposed for aesthetics. Put a great foreground in front of a great background. Pay attention to light. I mean, these are things that we hear.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that David does very well is he is able to articulate meaning and present meaning to these things rather than just these sort of buzzwords or calls to action that are otherwise sometimes very nebulous.
Do you think that there needs to be a Khan Academy of Photography? In the sense that I like David's work. I love people who do books like this that are well done, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's so much out there, right? But there is so much out there that are like these kinds of almost philosophical kind of ideas, right?
You know. Yes.
Do we need 150 people saying similar stuff, or should we try to say, you know what, here is the Moses down from the mountain, 15 things that we all know we need to think more about?
I waffle on that. I waffle back and forth because I do like listening, watching, reading new things. And if I can glean one or two things from each new thing that I read, watch or listen to, then it was worth it. But the other side of that is there's a lot of crap out there that I don't get anything out of.
There is. And you also, I always worry about the people who who get so into reading this stuff that they never actually go and do any of this stuff.
Sure. Right?
They think that the reading, oh, I learned it. Well, no, you're learning it. That's step one.
Right.
There's step 2 through 27 over here.
Right. Now, how do you apply it?
Yeah. Show me something you've done. Show me right. some work.
And that's where I think David, not only in his ebooks, but in his print books,
is the best of the best.
I think he's right up there. Yeah, I think he's right up there.
You know, somebody said on the group the other day, they made a comment like, I want to do more video. Does anybody have any resources to learning how to like do documentary video? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what have you done so far? You know, have you gotten a camera, shot some footage, opened it up in iMovie and moved it around? And you know what I mean? Because like ultimately that's what you're going to have to do. And that's the only way you're going to get better.
Right.
Is just doing it. You know? Yeah. Your first one's going to stink. But the next one will be better. And, you know, and he put up some footage of a woman reading, I think it was like some biblical quotes or something, sitting in a chair, reading some stories like off a card.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. You know, it was better than a lot of the stuff that's out there that people think is good,
right.
You know, and he was just starting out.
Yeah. And for some reason, the need to have the secret sauce has outweighed the need to go out and first give it a shot.
Yeah. People say to me, how do you write songs? How do you do this? I was like, have you tried? Have you sat down at a piano and just plunk away at stuff and sing something until something new comes out? Because that's where it starts. Even for Diane Warren, that's where it starts, you know? So he showed some footage and I was like, and a bunch of us chimed in. I said, it's really good. Next time try this or try that, or, you know, the audio is really good. Have you tried the video this way? Or have you tried a light behind her? You know, whatever it is.
Right.
But I think it's sort of doing and then looking back, reflecting. Like that's the only way forward, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, you and I have both to a degree come from design jobs, design backgrounds, where I would imagine that you guys did postmortems on projects as well.
Okay. I mean, yes.
Sure. We did postmortems on everything. So let's look at what worked. Let's look at what didn't work.
Yep. Yeah.
And then let's apply what didn't work and see if we can move that over into the what worked column on the next one.
Right. And as you get better, I think you naturally do that. Like when I come home, you know, I took some pictures the other day and I do a lot of compositing and I was like, ah, man, I wish I had shot this, or I wish I had done this slightly differently. Mm-hmm. And they're very small things in the grand scheme of things.
Right. But now that's in your mental tool chest to try next time.
But I'm like, oh, next time I got to make sure that he twists a little more this way, or I need to get this extra shot of this.
Right.
Now I'm good enough at what I do that, you know, 90% of people are never going to notice anything that's pissing me off. But that's how I got to be good at it, because I just would beat myself up about it.
Right.
So maybe beating yourself up about failure is actually a good thing.
As long as that doesn't become, as long as it's not this sort of cyclical thing that you can't get out of.
I understand what you're saying. As long as you don't get stuck in a downward spiral.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right.
That's fair. Hey, we're you know what we'll do? We'll put the link to 10 in the show notes.
Yeah, go download it. It's free.
And
give it a download.
And you know, for people who are trying to, they think they need more gear, go read this book, try some of this stuff. Maybe you'll get something out of it, which is ultimately what we're trying to do here on the show.
Yeah.
But thank you. Thank Dave next time you talk to him for putting that up. That's nice.
Absolutely.
Man, people in the Google Plus community,
there's been some spirited debate going on.
That's
right. Yeah, a little film versus digital discussion.
Where did that come? Who started that?
I think was Jeremy Bryant? Jeremy, did you start this?
What
thing?
Did he say?
Is it your fault, Jeremy? Hold on, let me see if I can get to it real quick. Yeah. Okay. Jeremy posted this little documentary called Long Live Film.
Okay.
Not little. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make
Be
it
little.
Sound little. Yeah, yeah. Didn't mean to say 46 minutes. And Jeremy writes, good doc for the film lovers among us, perhaps a bit repetitive and probably preaching to the choir, but will surely give Bill Wadman more fuel to fire his argument against film shooters who say it just looks better, quote unquote.
Yes. I like film too. Yeah. You know, I just don't think it's the future, and I don't think it's going to be around for forever. So I can't do it professionally. You know,
yeah. I just find some of the commentary.
But it's, man, they got into it though.
Interest, yeah, yeah. It was fun.
I particularly like when Craig B.
No, well, Chris Connors says maybe we should just stick to religion and politics so things remain civil.
Yeah, that was good.
Genius, Chris.
I like that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's you know what's good though. I like going on to that group and knowing that if I don't go look at it one day,
yeah,
it's still there doing stuff without us, and people are like getting in on it and talking, and you know what I mean.
Yep.
Also, as a little aside. Freddie Clark is going to help me put together a little workshop, probably somewhere in New Jersey for late January.
Freddie.
So we're going to do a
keep
portrait.
Me in the loop for that.
Yeah. We're going to do a portrait workshop. It's probably going to be like 10, 12 people, you know, $200-$300, for probably an afternoon. And we're going to show you everything that I could possibly show you in 3 or 4 hours.
Now, are you going to meet at Chris's restaurant again or no?
Oh, I don't know. No, we were going to get studio space, or there's actually a house apparently we were thinking of getting, which is fine. But, you know, I want to make sure that we get people to sit for us who are not too modelly, because, you know, the pretty girl standing blankly in front of a pretty place is not really my style of photography. So I'd rather try to do something a little more intimate. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
You know, keep a lookout for that kind of thing. Yeah. Did you see that Red Dragon though, camera? What'd they say? 18 stops, 20 stops,
18 to 20 stops of dynamic range. If that's really true,
that's so flat that like you would have to put a huge S curve on it even to have it look like anything.
Yeah.
Like that's really flat.
Well, look at some of the stuff coming out of the cinema cam, the pocket cam.
Oh, those things get like 13 or 14 stops.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous.
Tons of latitude.
Hey, you know how much dynamic range slide film has?
Hit me.
None at all. hey, you like this new little... Fuji's putting out a new instant camera. Is this true?
It is true.
I think I saw this thing at the photo show thing
Mini,
I went to.
Mini 90? Mini, it looks like a little retro-y kind of course
Instax Mini 90 Neo Classic camera. I think they need to work on this name a little bit.
Yeah, it needed to make it a little longer.
Yeah. Was it Microsoft naming this thing? Home edition.
Hey kids, just visit Fujifilm Instax Mini 90 Neo Classic Camera.com.
But so wait, this shoots on it's 2x3-inch images. These things are like postcards.
Like a business card, now, basically.
Here's the question though, is this actual analog instant film or is this like a digital camera that's doing like a little print in the camera?
I believe it's an
Instax mini film.
I think it's just the smaller version of like the 4x5 film that they just get discontinued.
Okay. Okay. I just, you know what I'm talking about though? Like the Polaroid Zinx or whatever it is, you know, Z Ink stuff where it's like, it's essentially,
I don't think it's that. Okay. It's like a little printer inside. I don't
yeah.
Think
essentially. Yeah. 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 Okay. Well, that's interesting. We'll put that in the show notes too. We should put a link to it on Amazon. So if people are interested in that. Oh, by the way, hey, while we're talking about that, I sent you a link to it. I actually bought an ebook version of it. Is that, there's an Amazon, a book I saw at MoMA the other day.
Oh, that Polaroid book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a book about the history of Polaroid. And I started reading it. And it's
you have to shake it for 30 seconds before you can read it.
It's called Instant, The Story of Polaroid. And
Ringing the funny.
It's got 40 reviews and it's got 4.5 stars. So everyone basically says that it's wonderful in the sense that it's fun and a well-written history of Polaroid, but then some people are just like, yeah, it's cute, it's a fast read, but it's, you know, you're not getting in depth. It's essentially like popular sciencey kind of writing,
kind of a puffy piece, right?
But I'll put in the show notes because I don't know all of the history of Polaroid and how it all happened, so it's kind of interesting to me. It's pretty cool stuff. did you see this Instagram movie where some guy took all the Instagram photos and put them in like a frame at a time just to show that they're all the same picture?
Well, yeah, culled through a
that
selection.
Must have been really time consuming.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, it's only 852 Instagram pictures from 852 users.
Now I wonder how he did that. Did he just shoot, like, search for shoes and then search for bicycle handlebars? I mean, can you? Is it that granular? Can you get there?
I don't know. I don't as someone. See episodes 5 through 26 of I'm Taking Pictures. As someone who doesn't use Instagram,
right.
I don't know how good their search functionality is. Who was I talking to the other day that used Instagram that I was actually surprised by? Oh, I forget. I think Randy Duchesne just started using Instagram.
Randy.
Yeah. I had a good talk with Randy the other day.
He just bought a new camera, didn't he? What is he using?
He uses a Sony RX100.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's what he uses for his like little walk-around camera. Right. You know, when I saw him speak last week, he said, you know, it's funny, people comment, because, I mean, he has a 5D2 that he uses for, you know, bigger stuff.
Right.
But it's a 20-megapixel little compact camera, so if you have light, it's fine, you know. And he's just like, what photographer wouldn't have killed for this camera 20 years ago?
Sure.
A thing that I can blow up to 30 by 40 inches that fits in my pocket, that autofocuses, that, you know.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah. What are we complaining
about? Like, none of this stuff is slowing you down. Anyway, good stuff there. All right. This is something that somebody tweeted to us that I really think is pretty cool or interesting.
It's interesting. It's kind of
terrifying.
It's kind of scary. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. You got the article open?
I do.
Tell me about this thing.
So according to, this is from British Journal of Photography, who I really dig. In fact, they've got a brand new iPhone-only magazine dedicated to mobile photography called Filter, F-L-T-R, in the App Store. It seems pretty cool. Anyway, so this photographer, Jan Morvan, has been shooting pictures of French gangs for almost 50 years. In 2000, I guess he released this book called Gang Story, which was kind of a part narrative, part retrospective of his work.
Okay.
And the article reads, in the book, Morvan includes the portrait of Petit Mathieu,
okay.
A 17-year-old far-right, yeah, little Matt. Okay, a 17-year-old far-right activist who posed with a flare gun and a hammer, two weapons that were not outlawed in France at the time, and which he could use in street fights.
Imagine a street fight in France. Go ahead. Le pew.
Wow.
Go ahead. Hi, French people. Go ahead.
Pieces of baguettes littering the streets. I don't know. No.
Butter and jelly everywhere.
That's right.
Go ahead.
It was a myth. Okay.
No.
No. So sued. This. Okay. So Marvin got sued by Petit Mathieu.
Okay. Why?
For using his likeness in the book.
Okay.
So. Okay, it's just, it's mind-numbing to me that the book has to be pulled. And I don't know, do they re-edit? Do they just re-release it without?
In America, that would be, I think it would be, if he was doing it just for art's sake, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
This is artistic work.
Yeah.
I don't know that the guy could say all that much, like street photography, right? You don't need releases just for street photography. He's out in the public. And this guy posed for the picture.
Right.
Apparently, his second lawsuit is against the photographer and his publisher, claiming that the photograph didn't represent his current beliefs.
Right.
And that he should own the rights to his own image. Basically saying, that's not who I am anymore. This was taken 10 years ago or whatever it is.
So the context of how you're presenting me is incorrect.
Right.
It's false.
So I may have been some crazy right-wing activist 12 years ago, but I'm not anymore, so you're not allowed to show me as a right-wing activist from a picture from 10 years ago.
Right.
That's crazy talk.
5,000 euro fine, and the book publisher had to withdraw the book.
He said in an interview, basically in this case, two opposing rights were pitted against each other, the right to control your own image and the right to inform. In this case, the right to control your own image, which was introduced by French Minister Elisabeth Guigou in 2000 won over the right to inform. There are 250 images in this book, and what this sentence means is that 250 people could sue me. In essence, this sentence is a ban on a photographer's right to work.
It's interesting.
It's, you know what it is? This is going to sound like a jingoistic comment, but I don't mean it at all as that.
A what kind of comment?
Jingoistic, like a militaristic rah-rah.
Okay.
There are some things, sometimes I forget that even a lot of Western nations in this world aren't the same as America when it comes to rights of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In much the same way that all like those libel laws in England that the scientist Simon Singh got sued for.
Right.
You know, he wrote an article saying that the efficacy of chiropractics for all kinds of stuff is not shown in any sort of scientific stuff. And the British Chiropractic Association sued him, saying that they were libelous against him. And it's just like, he's like, no, I was just stating fact. And they're like, no, it doesn't matter. You know, you said something mean about me and I'm going to sue you.
Right.
And it's like, whoa, slow down here. So facts don't even protect you. Truth, you know, doesn't even protect you from being able to say the truth. You know, like at least in America, you know, you can get sued for saying something untrue about somebody. You know, if mm-hmm. I said Jeffrey is a very spry young man.
There it is.
You know, and you didn't want to be known as a spry young man, you could sue me and say that's a lie. You know, that's libelous.
Right.
But like, if I said, you know, Jeffrey's this really old guy who lives in the desert, like, you got nothing on me. You know what I mean? But this is really scary.
Right. Right.
And in America, it generally goes to the person, to the artist, and it's just like, well, you know what? Suck it up. You sat for that picture when you were 17 years old or 18 years old or whatever it is. Like, sorry. You know? Right. Like, you can't whitewash that from history. It's like the people online who want you to be able to whitewash your like online history and stuff. Like, not just, you know, empty your cookies, but that you should be able to go delete stuff that happened on the internet 10 years ago.
Right, right.
What, are you kidding me?
I wonder if...
What use is it if you could just delete stuff afterwards?
Were releases signed? I'd be curious. Or
even if he had a release, I wonder if you could word a release in a way that would make... This, I don't know. This is just scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy said, look, I don't have money to pay for a lawyer. I don't have money to appeal. He said, this decision is representative of France's cultural exception that there's nothing to see in France. There's nothing to photograph, he said.
Mm.
I think it's fascinating and terrifying at the same time. You know, look, I don't like the idea of somebody taking a picture of me with, you know, if I fall down and my pants get ripped and, you know, my ass is hanging out and somebody takes a street photo and it makes me look bad. It, you know, I don't like the idea of that either, but it did happen, right? You know what I mean? Like, right, in that case, right. So it's like, come on. You know, you were at one point when you were 17, some like punky kid with a zip gun or whatever, a flare gun, you mm-hmm. know? Like, whoa, I don't understand this. It's a level of control over themselves and reality, which is just completely insane. You know, it's like trying to turn everything into a scripted television show.
Right.
And I think that that's scary. And I think that it sets a bad precedent. I don't know. You think I'm overreacting?
I don't know. I'd like to see more detail than is offered in this article, but it seems odd to me that you can.
Yeah. I'm not commenting on exactly what I'm commenting on what they're saying here and extrapolating it to what it could lead to, you know?
Yeah. It's very strange. It's very odd to me,
but just the idea that any art you make that involves somebody else, especially as a photographer, because photographs are always going to be some sort of direct representation of the person. It's
sure.
not like this is this pastiche that I wrote that is sort of Jeffrey Sidoris, but not really. It's some other, you know, old guy from
right.
the desert. But you
right.
know what I mean? Like, you can't claim that. It's like it's a photograph of Jeffrey. And so Jeffrey says that photograph is me and I own the rights to anything that is me. Whether or not you made
it. Yeah. This is interesting. He also says, I had warned the book publisher that we could face legal issues with Matthew's photograph, yet that photograph was taken more than 20 years ago. Matthew is now 43. You can't recognize him, and his name is nowhere to be seen in the book.
So, yeah. So what judge actually went for this?
It doesn't look like him. And unless you know that that's him, you wouldn't know that that's him.
Right.
So what are we talking about?
This is terrifying to me. It really is scary. Like, not just, I mean, photographically fine, but just the idea that we're getting to this point where it's like we're all living our lives and things happen, good things and bad things, and you know, you meet people and you love people and, you know, all the rest of it. It's just the idea that this stuff is what gets is considered serious is just strange to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. What do you guys think, listeners?
Yeah. Let's get some
overreaction on the court's part, overreaction on the photographer's part. Who's right?
Yeah.
Who's wrong?
Hey, Jeffrey, you know what the Time's best portraits of 2013 are?
What are they?
A bunch of pictures that people took for Time.
That's right. That's right. Do we have time to go through them?
A number of overexposed shots of... some of them are lovely, and then other ones are just like, huh?
I'm going to say it right now. My favorite one is the shot of Tina Fey.
That's because Tina Fey's awesome.
Yes, she is.
And you know what? It's the Tina Fey one is the one with the most pageantry in it.
So you hate it?
I think it's a beautiful shot. I think that level of pageantry is fine. Pageantry it's, for I mean, look, pageantry's got, sake is my problem.
You've got Jay-Z looking like Jay-Z. You've got, I don't know.
Yeah, Mark Seliger's just like, Jay-Z, just sit down there. Jay-Z's like, yeah, right, man. I do like the little Jay-Z thing, though, with the old lady on the train.
Yes.
I'm all right
yes.
with Jay-Z because of that video.
I do like the portrait of Malala Yousafzai.
Oh, the girl.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah. You know that girl?
I know of her. I saw an interview with her on
actually,
John
I like
Stewart.
The next one, the Mario Draghi with the white stripe and the black. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's nice. I like that. It's just, that's very like Arnold Newman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got that sort of, although I think Newman would have had less the light on the right side, the left side of his face, the
right,
you know,
right.
His right side, our left side. He would have toned that down a little bit, so it was a little more dramatic.
I get what is. What? Do you have any sense of what? I mean, Time's best portraits.
Yeah.
So is this Time Magazine's selection of the best.
These were all for Time Magazine. So.
Right. So what? I wonder what the criteria, how these are judged.
I think they said, let's pull all the pictures of famous people that have been taken in the last year and somebody choose 20 of them or 38 of them to show.
Okay. I like the Cate Blanchett picture too.
Yeah, the Cate Blanchett picture is very beautiful too. But you know what? Can you take a bad picture of Cate Blanchett? Come on, let's be serious.
Probably not.
I know that I couldn't. Look at that girl. Oh, my God. She's beautiful.
Yes.
I think she's very odd looking, though. Is that what makes her beautiful?
I wouldn't say odd. I would say unique.
Okay. You say unique and I say odd.
Yeah. But so interesting. Yeah, go take a look at those. See what you think. What's what are your favorites? Let us know in the community.
Hey, let's do one more before we.
What do you got?
What do you think of this? What do you think about the people, you know, photographers who are all about decay? You know what I'm talking about? They like love abandoned buildings. You did your little thing in the desert where you went through a abandoned town, right? A ghost town?
Ludlow. Yeah. I stop there almost every time I go to my dad's house.
Is it on the road to
it's
on the
it's, yeah, it is National Trails Highway, which is Route 66. It's right off the freeway, right off the 40.
Did you get your kicks while you were there? but now what is the thing that people love about it? Like I
can't speak to that.
Last week I took pictures in an old post office in New York City.
right?
That I was in because my friend Craig was working in there on an art thing. And he's just like, oh, you know, go wander and take some pictures. And it's this huge monumental building that's like the size, it's a full block. Like it's a full city block, the whole building.
Right.
And it's been abandoned only for like 6 years, apparently.
Yeah, this I would put this more of an empty space, not I mean, it's not as dilapidated as a lot of the things that you see photographs of.
Sure.
You know, like, well, yeah, like people that go to like Detroit and look at, you know,
right.
You know, or some of the mental hospitals that are just really creepy.
It reminds me last summer I went to see one of the Creative Mornings things on Governor's Island, which is this island out in the river off of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be a government thing. It used to be like a fort, and then the government sold it to the city for like a dollar. And now you can go there on Saturdays and Sundays in the summertime. You can go and take they have these what are they called, ferry
tour.
You can take a ferry over there with your bike and ride around and stuff. And there's some buildings that are like beautiful and fine, and then there's some buildings that are completely abandoned, right? So they're like letting them go down. And I remember they had some questions for the lady who runs the whole thing, who like came up with the whole idea, has been shepherding it for the last 8 years or whatever. And this one girl's just like, yeah, you know, all the buildings that are sort of like abandoned, decaying, like, are you going to like rehab all of those so that they're nice and new and like ruin everything that's like beautiful about them? You know, like one of those kinds of things.
Right. Right.
And the lady up on stage, she just stalled and she stopped. She took a second and she looks at the lady and she goes, you're one of those.
Nice.
And I was like, that's awesome. She goes, yeah, there's always people like you who she's like, the worst possible thing we could do for those buildings is to do nothing. Like letting people use them and fix them up a little is the only way that they're going to still be there in 50 years. Like I liked walking around this place and I think it's neat and whatever it is, but What is people like fetishize the whole abandoned thing. And yes, this state mental hospital is creepy. As is the, did you ever see the, Wizard of Oz, park? There's a Wizard of Oz theme park that is like abandoned and it's like in the woods now. So there's like this, there's this yellow brick road, like in the woods.
I don't know what it is about this asylum book by Christopher Payne.
Yeah, get it right.
Sorry, Christopher. Although he probably does go by Chris, who knows? There's something fascinating about it. Some of these shots remind me very much of Dan Winter's shots in how he shoots objects.
Yes, although I think Dan Winter's does it with a little more, I don't know. Dan Winter.
Well, there's more production, I would think.
Yeah, perhaps. You know? Okay, that's fair.
But I don't know what it is. Why are we drawn to these things?
Yeah. Are we drawn to the stories of what possibly could have happened in this room?
Yeah.
Or are we just drawn to the idea that we are is it just a matter of it's a mortality thing? Right, like we're seeing what happens when it's time, things died, and we're staring at them because we're fetishizing.
Yeah, I don't
our
know.
Own. Yeah,
it's, you know, there's the one shot in here of the patient suitcases. It's just a stack of patients' suitcases that have been left behind, and you know the their items, their personal effects in some still in them. That, I don't know. It's very strange to me.
Freaks you out, doesn't it?
It does, but at the same time, I could flip through these types of books for hours.
Right. What do you get out of it?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I can't figure out either. I mean, I look at whenever there's the post that like, here's this creepy abandoned place. Like, look through these pictures. I always do.
Yeah. Yeah. The like this. There's a shot here of an autopsy theater, St. Elizabeth's Hospital, Washington, D.C.
You know what I think part of it is? I think it might be the idea that these places actually exist. You know what I mean? In some sort of weird, look, there's this place across the ocean where there's gold all over the place. And you're just like, this weird, creepy prison actually exists with this giant room or the stuff in the old like train station or theater in Detroit that are all like decrepit. And you're like, this beautiful theater and people just like let it sit there and decay, you know? Like
there's a shot here, unclaimed cremation urns, Oregon State Hospital.
That's just creepy. It almost feels like they are movie sets.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Maybe that's something about it too. I don't know.
I don't know. I do like Christopher Payne's work though. He's got a series in the Steinway Factory that is fascinating.
Do you think he's going to have a son named Max?
Max Payne. I got it. All right. Video games.
Took you a second there, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did take me a second.
We should talk about our photographer of the week.
Do you really want to talk about our photographer of the week?
Yes.
The feisty Italian Mario Testino.
Okay. I love almost exactly half of Mario Testino's work.
Oh, he's not. I'm sorry. He's not Italian. He's born in Lima, Peru. I am sorry. My mistake.
Yeah. Nice one, Jeffrey.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I mistake.
He's Peruvian, but where does he live now?
Probably wherever he wants.
Yeah, pretty much. Mario Testino is one of those photographers. So he's like a big sort of fashion celebrity kind of guy who shoots for Vogue all the time. You know, very famous. Mm-hmm. He's got all these famous pictures of Princess Diana and that kind of stuff. And I like almost half of his work and I can't stand the other half.
Really?
Yeah. Like I hate that like hard flash party stuff. Like the picture of Ashton Kutcher and what's her name, like almost making out, you know what I'm talking about? And his Demi Moore, like all that sort of hard flash sort of Terry Richardson-y kind of stuff.
Okay.
I will give you,
I do like the more produced.
Yeah. And I don't, I mean the fashion stuff is fine, but it's whatever fashion. Like, but the stuff that is really beautiful, like there was a picture of, wait, who's the one from, who's the actress? Meg Ryan. I think he took this picture of Meg Ryan, Mario Testino. Yes. See,
I think he's fantastic.
He took some really lovely pictures of Meg Ryan. And that picture of, what the hell's her name? Gwyneth Paltrow with the light coming in behind her. That's like really blown out. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
That's a lovely shot. Like, that's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful picture. He obviously has very, very good, what's it called? People working for him. Makeup and hair and those kinds of people. Because this stuff's, like, just perfect. It's interesting that he was in that, what was it called? The Issue? Is that what it's called?
Right, the September issue.
The September issue.
Which is a really great documentary, by the way.
It is. The editor lady drives me crazy. But I love
Anna Winter.
Yeah, but I love the redheaded lady. What's her name? You know, the curly-haired redheaded lady?
What is she, creative director?
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah,
she's awesome. And the way she interacts with people, I'm like, okay, I would work with that lady. Anna Winter, I would just want to throw through a wall. I'm just like, oh, would you shut up?
Wow.
Oh, she drives me nuts. Like every time I was watching that, I was like, like get her off the screen. Get the other lady back on. I like her. Well,
okay.
You disagree?
I do.
That was hyperbolic. I'm not actually going to throw her through a wall, but if I would never work with that woman. You kidding me? Ugh. Like, you know what it is? Here's what it is. Even though both of those women were making comments about other people's work,
mm-hmm.
right? One of them did it in a way that just seemed like she was making comments because she's the boss and she needs to make comments to make herself important. Where the redheaded lady was making comments because, you know, she really thought something should change. And when nothing needed to change, she was just like, oh, that looks great. You know, there's like those two different kinds of people who give criticism. The people who are actually giving criticism because they have a good idea. And then there's the people who are just giving criticism because they like to criticize, you know, or feel like it's a power thing, you know. Anyway,
okay.
They hire in this show, they hire Mario Testino to shoot some fashion shots for, is it Vogue? I guess it is.
Yeah.
And they ask him to go to Rome with this model, and they have an idea of like this picture in front of the Colosseum. And so Mario goes and comes back with like rolls of film or, you know, sheets, contact sheets. And they're looking at him. And they're like, well, where are the pictures from the front of the Colosseum? And he's just sitting there and he's like, it did not work out.
Yeah. Like, no, wait. Yeah, like, but that's why we sent you there.
Yeah. And he's just like, it did not look like it. I did not like it.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome because they have nothing to say to him. I love how they're just like, can we see them? No. Like, I would just love to get to the point where I could say no to people like that in a way that was just like, I thought about your request. No.
Yeah.
And like, that's it. Like, there's nothing past that, you know? It was just, he's so very, I guess, Peruvian about it all. You know what I mean? Just the way he carries himself. He's like, no.
I dig his stuff so much.
Oh, a lot of the stuff I love. I think
he would
love.
Be fascinating to talk to.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, I wonder if his, I wonder if he'd be, it would be difficult to get much out of him.
You might have to get through some of the shtick.
Yeah.
You might. I don't know. I mean, he seems pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's probably pretty fabulous. And whether you got him in a good mood or a bad mood would make or break the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, some of his fashion shots are just classic. Like the one of Kate Moss.
Right.
I think it's like a Chanel. I think it's a Guess ad or whatever it is, where she's got the plaid shorts on and she's like looking in a mirror of a car. It's like, oh man. Yeah, you got it right. You know, his stuff is very iconic 90s portraits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of stuff that you look back and you go, yes, that was of that era in a way
that
you can look back on now, you know? Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful I really, really like his stuff.
Anything else you want to say about him? Is there anything about his stuff you don't like?
For what it is and for what he shoots.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I think he is a really great example of where fashion is at right now.
Okay.
As a portrait photographer, I prefer simpler portraits.
Yeah.
But because you've got the framework of fashion here, there's a...
He's looking at it through a fashion lens, even if he's taking a straight portrait. Yeah,
there's more... It necessarily has to be more extravagant. Yeah. It has to be more dramatic. It has
but,
to
you know,
be
he gets people to do things that... He seems to be very good at coaxing things out of people. And I always wonder...
Seems to be, much like Helmut Newton.
Yeah, but I always wonder if that is because... He's actually good at doing that, or because he's famous enough that people trust him that, you know, he's like, no, just jump up in the air and throw your, you know, your arms up in the, around the, you know, this way. And you kind of go, I don't think it'll look stupid in your head, you know? And you go, okay, I guess I should do it because Mario Testino is telling me to do it. Like, I wonder how much of that is in the equation, you know?
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure. He does have some really lovely portraits, specifically the portraits of the royal family that are up. They're elegant.
Yes, very simple. Although the one of Prince William and Kate for their like their engagement photo, where it's very obviously photoshopped in his head, that one drives me crazy. Here, this shot here. I'll send you a link.
What do you got?
That's totally composite.
Oh, okay. Is it, you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You don't think they were really standing in that room?
I think they were standing in the room. I think it's a different picture of his head.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. It's pretty small. I need to see it bigger.
Yeah. Like that, there's things like that where I'm just like, really, Mario, you couldn't have got it all in one shot or you couldn't have gotten better retouch. You know, like it wasn't convincing to me. And I was like, at that level, you're taking a picture of a guy at that level. It should be flawless, you know?
to me. I'm a fan. I like his stuff.
He's I wonder how much he does after shooting.
Oh, see, here's a bigger one of that shot. I think you could be mistaken.
I've seen a big print of it, and it looks very composited to me.
Huh. All right.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I you know, in my experience, I trust. He took pictures of the original couple too. It's got to be weird. Like going in circles on all that.
Maybe.
That's just kind of strange.
I don't know. I think it would be a challenge. I think it would be a challenge to make them stand on their own. You know, to create something that isn't repeating.
Yeah. Okay. I gotcha.
You know, and at this level, what I find interesting is you've shot some of the most interesting and beautiful people in the world multiple times. How do you approach each time you shoot them so it doesn't, oh yeah, I've already shot you, or it doesn't get compared, oh yeah, this looks like the way you shot so-and-so last time. How do you keep that fresh, or how to not, at this level, how do you not become derivative of yourself?
Yeah, that is a good question.
That's got to be a challenge.
Oh, here we go. Prince William and Kate Middleton's official engagement photos were retouched, it has emerged. Palace has confirmed that there was minimal alterations. Uh-huh. Second picture shows a couple in more formal mood, blah, 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 blah.
I think replacing a head would not be a minimal.
It looks... Oh, God, that one looks... The one where they're cuddling is one thing, but the more formal one... adjustments were laid... Oh, excuse me. I shouldn't say that on the show.
But you did.
Yeah, I'll have to put a marker in that.
Fancy.
anything else before we're done?
I don't know. You want to bash Mario's work some more?
I love his work. You kidding me? He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, no, he's good.
I'm bashing his retoucher.
Wow. There it is.
Anything you want to say?
No.
Okay.
No, other than, is this the last show before?
No, we do one more.
One more. Christmas Eve. Okay. All right. Ooh, Christmas Eve. Fun.
Hey, I'm going to get the sleigh bells.
Are you listening? That's,
yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Why don't you redeem your horrible keyboard skills and play the intro live?
Huh. Today or next time?
Next time.
Yeah, I just got to figure out how to wire that up so that I could record the audio.
Lay in the smackdown.
Okay, I can do that.
Redeem yourself, Wadman.
It's funny, actually. I was noodling on playing the theme song at the show the other day when I was warming up.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, ironically. Yeah. All right, so if you want to get a hold of us, you write to podcast@ontakingpictures.com.
Yes.
Or you can find Jeffrey and I on Twitter, Jeffrey Sadoris, JeffreySadoris, and I am Bill Wadman, WADMAN, both of them on Twitter. There's the Google Plus group. There's our phone number, which I always forget, which is 347-687-9411.
What did Freddie say about something about the phone number?
Did he send us something? He did send us something.
I was in the group. Remember he said something like, I was like, I don't know, something about the prom or a dance or something. I don't know. It was pretty funny though. Well, Freddie's a funny guy.
He is a funny, funny guy. Anything else before we wrap up?
I think we've pretty much covered it.
Okay. So we'll see you all next week.
Yeah. Have a great week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Hey, one more thing.
Yep.
Before we go, I just remembered this. If you could vote for us for the what is it, the Stitcher Awards?
Yep, the 2013 Stitcher Awards.
2013 Stitcher Awards. If you're enjoying the show, vote for us best overall and what is it, society and culture?
Yeah, oh, is that what we're going for? Okay,
that seems to be the thing.
It's Stitcher.com/StitcherAwards.
Right,
we'll get you there.
Or yeah,
yeah, and yeah, vote for us and maybe we'll win an award. Yay,
wouldn't that
awards.
Be funny? That would be funny.
We like awards.
That'd be pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah. Someday we'll let people buy t-shirts, too.
Is it like the Oscars? Would we have to say, you're listening to the Stitcher award-winning podcast on Taking Pictures? Is it like that?
Didn't we do that last week?
Wow. There it is. All right. Thanks for listening.